Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our favorite, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
It's good to be back.
I understand in the Correspondents Association dinner, you played Carmen Miranda.
No, I played Chris Christie, but somehow looked like Carmen Miranda, yes. It's a yearly spoof we do of the lawmakers, and for some reason, well, it had to do with Donald Trump, then Christie was hanging around with him, and obviously Trump has his issues with Mexico, so they dressed me up in a muumuu and a Carmen Miranda fruit hat, and it was 30 seconds, but memorable.
I'm sure somebody can find that on YouTube.
I'm sure.
Okay. Ken Lovett, you know more about government than anybody I know. You're on it every day. You're looking at it. Look, we've been talking about this for months, maybe years. The New York State Legislature is a cesspool. No two ways about it. And they just will not understand that the people have had enough. And they say, screw it. We don't care. We're just going to continue on our way. We don't want any limits on our outside income. We don't want this. We don't want that. What do you make of this?
The only way it's going to change is if the public really is upset, and polls show they are, but polls always show they're upset with ethics, and people start losing their seats, because that is what they pay attention to. And the reality is, and I've used this stat probably 1,000 times on this show, that 2 years ago, you had 4 sitting elected lawmakers, 3 in the state legislature and a sitting congressman, who were all under indictment, and they all got reelected. And they have all since subsequently been removed from office because they got convicted. But that used to be, if you were under indictment, that was a disqualifier. Now, 4 of them in the same year got reelected. What message does that send that the public really wants change?
Well, you take a poll, you've reported on this poll, and 97% of the people say this place is a cesspool. And yet, is it just the fact that people feel, I can't do anything about this?
I think there's a bunch of it. I think part of it is they like their guy. There's always that, you know, let everyone else throw the bums out. I like my guy, he brings home the bacon, quote unquote. But I also think that the decade and a half or so of scandal that has just been unrelenting and growing worse every year, I think it's turned people off to politics. I think both from Washington and there's a reason why voter turnout is so low. People just don't feel like they have a voice, and people don't feel like they can make a difference. So you have people who come out, but, you know, getting elected with 20% of the turnout or 30%, depending on the year. Even Bill de Blasio in the city, you know, he claimed his mandate. He won with a huge margin, 70%+, I think. But only 18% of the electorate came out.
I'm fascinated by what you have to say here. I know that the Daily News has been pushing a story. They want a bill passed which would extend the amount of time you could go back and prosecute a child abuser. You've had to take some bric-a-brac because the state legislature won't do it, and the Daily News has been pushing it, and you're the guy up here.
And I am the guy up here. Yeah, no, it's certainly been both from the Assembly majority and the Senate Republican majority, the Assembly Democratic majority. They have not liked this because, you know.
Yeah, what's the because?
The because is they don't want to be seen like they're protecting predators. That's the bottom line.
Oh, they haven't liked the fact that the Daily News are going after
that's
them.
That's how it's been portrayed.
On the other hand, they won't move their behinds.
But they won't move the bill because this is a very controversial issue.
Why?
For the Catholic Church and other groups like the Boy Scouts. The real point of contention is there is a provision that a lot of the advocates want and that some and the bill sponsors want that would not only extend or eliminate the statute of limitations, both to bring a civil case or a criminal case, but they also want to add a 1-year window that would give past victims who no longer can sue under current law, the statute of limitation for them has run out. They want to give them a year to be able to bring a civil lawsuit. And the Catholic Church vehemently opposes this, as do, you know, Orthodox Jewish groups, you know, the parochial schools and the Boy Scouts. They feel it could bankrupt them, that you'll get this flood of claims and it could bankrupt them. And the church, not as powerful as it once was in Albany, but still powerful. And you see it has split both the Assembly Democratic Conference and the less so split of the Senate Republicans. They just won't do it.
So let me get this straight, Ken Lovett. Clearly, it is right. The Daily News is right in its editorial position. I'm going to put it that way. The Catholic Church may not like it. Some Orthodox Jewish groups might not like it. But tough darts. You know, that's just the way that it is. You mean to say legislators, rank and file legislators, are going to sit there and say, I'm going to go along with these institutions, even though the public wants this done?
They have for years. The Assembly passed a version of this bill four times, but the last time was 2008. And I should say that one of the things that changed was the Catholic Church at the time had hired Pat Lynch as a lobbyist. She was very close to the then Assembly Speaker, Sheldon Silver.
When you say very close, you're not kidding.
Yeah, according to court papers. But they stopped passing it in 2008. And what ended up happening, I don't know if you remember Vito Lopez.
Sure.
Not exactly a paradigm of virtue.
Called Vito Lopez.
Right. You know, because he went down in flames because of he was groping his staffers and sexually harassing his staffers. He put in a bill that the church liked. It's now carried by Assemblyman Michael Cusick from Staten Island, which would extend the statute of limitations, but it would not have the one-year look back. The Catholic Church does support this bill. But they haven't passed that one either, and the Senate has not either. Senate's never passed a bill on this issue.
So you work for a newspaper that speaks to hundreds of thousands of citizens every day. You put their pictures on the paper, on the front page of the paper, again and again and again, in basically the Hall of Shame. And apparently you come up short.
Well, we've still got a couple of weeks to find out if it comes up for sure or not. My guess is the likely outcome is each house may pass a bill. It just won't be the same bill. So they can all say they did something.
That old ruse.
So they can all say they did something and blame the other guy.
Yeah.
Either that or they'll pass the Cusick bill or they'll do nothing. I mean, those are the three options. I don't see them doing the broader bill, the omnibus bill, that would take care of a lot of the issues. Another issue that's kind of an interesting issue that no one really talked about much until this year is that public schools are treated much different than, say, parochial schools. So if you are abused as a child in a parochial school, a private institution, Boy Scouts, you have up until your 23rd birthday to bring a suit. But if you're abused in a public school or a public setting, like a foster care setting, you have 90 days from the incident occurring to tell the public entity that we're going to sue you.
Do you know why that is?
It was really done as part of the sidewalk laws. You know, like if you trip and fall, you shouldn't be able to come back 10 years later, 20 years later and say, I tripped and fall, I'm going to sue. So it's kind of an all-encompassing thing. I don't think they deliberately said we're going to do this. However, in the past, when certain lawmakers said maybe we should address this, the school boards association, the conference of mayors, the, you know, counties, the teachers' unions, they all howled and it never went anywhere. Not only didn't go anywhere, but Marge Markey, who has the Child Victims Act, for 2 years had it in her bill and then removed it because of the outrage from the public sector.
That's really unbelievable. Let's go back to ethics for a minute. Talk to me about something called LLC.
Limited liability companies. This is a loophole that basically says, you don't really need corporate limits on contributions. Because what happens is under state law, a company can only give $5,000 a year total. And I'm not saying $5,000 per candidate. I'm saying $5,000 a year total in New York State. The Board of Elections over a decade ago, maybe longer, had a ruling that basically said that limited liability companies, which are LLCs, specially created by a lot of these corporations, can give up to the individual maximum, as opposed to like sticking to the 5,000. They can give individual candidates whatever the maximum is for an individual person. And not only that, but these companies can create as many LLCs as they want. So really, there's no limit on giving for them because they'll just create as many LLCs as they want. So they want to close, a lot of people want to close that loophole. one of the biggest beneficiaries of that loophole, I shouldn't even say one, the biggest beneficiary
is
Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has gotten millions and millions of dollars. At the same time, he's every year says we should close the loophole. He hasn't really worked toward it, but he always proposes it. This year, actually this week, he came out with a plan. He gave the legislature a smorgasbord of options. He said, I want to close the LLC loopholes. Here's 8 different bills to do it. One would be all-encompassing. Everybody cannot accept LLC money. And then the most narrow would be, okay, it would just impact the governor to start. So only the governor's race, only candidates for governor cannot accept LLC money. However, and this is what critics have said, for Cuomo, who's in trouble and fundraising and LLCs are now under investigation.
And we know he's under the microscope.
And he's under the microscope. Yeah. You outlaw this, but he also has a head start. The guy has $16 million right now in his campaign account. So if he says no LLCs and someone can't raise that kind of money, you know, it helps him against an opponent who's starting at a lower base. I actually put that to the governor the other day, and he said, yeah, but you never know, because you can get a self-funder like Michael Bloomberg, and that goes out the window, or you could get an independent expenditure PAC that, you know, can give unlimited amounts of money and raise unlimited amounts. You just don't know what it's going to be. So he kind of dismissed that argument. But certainly, it would be a benefit, at least at the start, for the governor.
Now, Ken Lovett, what I love about this whole thing is that the LLC, which frankly got in front of the Capitol and asked the first 100 people who passed what the LLC is, and they'll have no idea whatsoever. Ask them who the lieutenant governor is, they'll have no idea whatsoever. Okay, so now you bring this up, but really, this whole LLC thing tends to obfuscate what some of the real reforms ought to be, like, for example, limits on outside income for these legislators who are making out like bandits as a result of this. And that ain't going to get done, and the LLC thing becomes sort of a smokescreen.
Well, that's what John Flanagan said, the Senate Majority Leader. It's a red herring. It almost looked orchestrated, because the governor puts out his statement, and it's a strong statement, and you're like, wow, okay. And then 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, Flanagan puts out a very lengthy statement saying why it's not a good idea. And, you know, I was joking with people, I guess maybe half-jokingly you can say, whether the governor and Flanagan had an agreement. Flanagan and his members don't want the LLC, and you know, the companies, the corporations don't want an LLC loophole closure. So, he, you know, the governor puts it out there and says, look how I'm fighting for it, and then Flanagan kills it. And, you know, he knows Flanagan's going to kill it. So
he doesn't want it either.
And he doesn't want it either. Look, the LLC, I think, is an important one. I think it is a loophole that allows companies to skirt. However, the Republicans have a very good point in one situation. All these LLC loophole closure proposals only deal with companies, not unions. So the unions would be able to create their own kind of situation where they can do their own little things and circumvent. And nothing really addresses that. So I think, you know, that's the stated reason for the Republicans. The other thing is they get a lot of that money, too. They get millions of dollars from those companies through LLC. But you're right. I mean, it really, what's really needed is a package. I do think the LLC loophole is important. I think outside income would be interesting because, you know, so many of the scandals we've seen, both real conflicts of interest and perceived. Let's not forget, perceived conflicts of interest may not be illegal, but they certainly turn off the public. Those would be gone if you had some kind of income limit. All the scandal we saw with Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos, those would go away. Now, I don't know if they go away. Everyone finds a way around it, but it certainly would address it. There's a whole host of options, but they're not going to do it. You have a governor administration under investigation. You have the New York City mayor under investigation on 7 different points. You have the legislative leaders, Dean Skelos in the Senate and Shelley Silver in the Assembly, who not only were indicted but were convicted and sentenced to prison. If that is not enough to get a robust ethics package, nothing is.
Well, I hate to think that you're right. I hate to think you're right, Ken Lovett, but it does appear to be a very dismal situation. The only thing we who are concerned about this have going is Preet Bharara, who continues to keep his microscope out. But that leads us to another question, and that is the governor's email deletion policy. I mean, anybody in their right mind would see what this is all about. Tell us about it.
The governor had an email deletion policy, which, to be fair, started under Elliot Spitzer, but was expanded under Andrew Cuomo to include the agency. Spitzer only included the governor's office, Cuomo expanded it out to the agencies.
And why did he expand it out to the agencies?
Oh, you know, it's just to make more room on the system, we were told. But what it was it was a 90-day automatic email deletion policy. So if you had an email sitting in your folder, or if you had an email sitting in your, you know, your computer, it would automatically be deleted unless you took a specific step to say, save this one. And
well, why does he want to get rid of them? Come on, it isn't to save space. That's ridiculous. They waste tons of money, millions of dollars on all kinds of garbage. So this is to protect themselves in case there's anything embarrassing.
And you can't be, well, and to be fair, last year under pressure, he got rid of that 90-day deletion policy in May of 2015. However, you had a lot.
But he would have kept it if he could have.
He would have, and you have a lot of emails that could be of interest potentially to Preparara in these investigations.
Of course.
Whether it was emails between people in the chamber, you know, the governor's office, or between the governor's office and agencies that were deleted and may not, you know, depending on if they're still on the server or not, may not be retrievable. On top of that, the governor himself, I wrote this in 2012 for the first time, governor doesn't use email. He either uses phone or he has a BlackBerry, probably one of the last people around who has these things. But if you want to communicate with the governor and you're part of his inner circle, you use what's known as pin-to-pin messaging.
What does that mean?
And what it does is, it's like texting, except it's not on a server. So if you delete it, there's no record it ever existed. And this was in 2012. And I did a story with people saying, well, is there public information that's being... And the reality is, a lot of what his conversations would be on this kind of system would probably not be obtainable through a FOIL, you know, a Freedom of Information Law request. But I said at the time, it would be through a subpoena for a prosecutor, but now they don't exist. There's no paper trail. And that's what the 90-day deletion policy probably did. It got rid of a paper trail. And don't forget, Andrew Cuomo was an attorney general. And when Elliot Spitzer was attorney general, he always used to say, people are dumb, don't write things down, because it comes back, and email was part of that. And email is part of what ended up hurting Elliot Spitzer, and don't think Andrew Cuomo didn't see any of that. So there's no real trail. So, you know, we'll have to see. I don't think it's going to impede it, but it could hamper what Preet Bharara is doing.
Okay, let's go there. Preet Bharara is doing something. He is looking at the Buffalo billions, at the contracts that have been awarded, and whether money comes back to the governor's campaign accounts as a result of having gotten a contract. I see a different Andrew Cuomo. I've mentioned that before. I think he is calmer, more low-key than the old let's go get 'em boys.
With Andrew Cuomo, I think, I don't know if I'd say he's calmer. I think behind the scenes, he's very much the same Andrew Cuomo.
Sure.
I think...
As in character, doesn't change.
Right. What Preet Bharara is looking at is serious. Was there bid rigging on certain projects? Was there a favoritism played? We know he's looking at Joe Prococo, a former top aide to the governor and a very, very close personal friend, doesn't get much closer. And a lobbyist, Todd Howe, who worked for Cuomo's father and worked for the governor at HUD and is close to the family and had his fingerprints on every deal, not only the Buffalo Billion, but deals in Syracuse, deals in the Hudson Valley, you know, just a lot of fingerprints. So they're looking into whether there was favoritism, what happened and how it happened. Now, it is very difficult, and the courts have ruled, to say just because a politician got money from someone who got a contract, it's hard to prove that quid pro quo. You know, that in itself is not easily, you know, prosecuted. So there's going to have to be more. But certainly when you're looking at the likes of Joe Prococo and Todd Howe, you're looking at people who know a lot about the governor. And I'm not saying, and I've said this before, I'm not saying there's anything to be had about the governor. But if there was, these are two guys who would know.
Who's going to roll?
I can't say anyone would roll. That would imply that there's something to roll out, you know, roll with. Look, Prococo, he's extremely loyal, and, you know, you talk to people and they'll say, oh, he'll never flip. You don't know what people do in a situation like this. He's got a family. He's got two young kids.
And his wife has been mentioned in all of this also.
His wife has been mentioned, and the feds will use everything they can to try and pressure someone to cooperate and to do things. Todd Howe has money problems. His career now is going to be in tatters. And the Cuomos have cut him loose even more than Prococo. They're like, you know, he was like Todd who? The governor basically acted like he never met the guy.
Yeah, right.
And this was a top guy for him. And even at HUD, he was his deputy chief of staff. I mean, to say that, well, we're not really close, we're not really friends, I think was disingenuous at best.
So, Ken Lovett, is the Buffalo Billion, the idea that you're putting $1 billion into the Buffalo region, is that in danger because the politics of the situation have changed?
That remains to be seen. That's a fear a lot of people have. I mean, the state this week is expected to sign off on another $485 million for the project.
Do both houses of the legislature have to do that?
Yes, in a sense. What it is, it's a public authorities control board, which has representatives, three representatives, one from the governor, one from the Senate majority, one from the Assembly majority, and it has to be a unanimous decision. The vote was supposed to take place last week and was postponed, the governor said, for scheduling reasons, but the legislative leader said, we want to do due diligence, but they seemed like they were going to let that go through, and I expect it will. You know, the idea that you're going to stop these projects that are in the process of going and Buffalo needs seems a little far-fetched, but certainly if companies are afraid that they're going to be drawn into this stuff or you know, Solar City's having its own problem. Solar City is the central project up there.
Beneficiary.
A $750 million plant that the state is building for it. The state will own it. They'll lease it and work out of their manufacturing plant. But Solar City stocks have been dropping. They're already, their job targets have gone down considerably. So add it all up, and the future is questionable. But I know that, you know, it's a huge deal to the governor, and he wants to make sure that it doesn't get derailed.
Can he survive all of these investigations? I mean, you got an awful lot of people looking at his friends. Obviously, he's of some interest to the prosecutor. You know, can he survive?
Can he survive? Sure, why not? First of all, no one has been accused of any wrongdoing. Let's start from there.
Right.
So if Preparara does his thing like he did when he investigated the Moreland Commission and somehow says it didn't look good, but I found no criminal, or I didn't find sufficient evidence, as he said, for the Moreland to bring criminal charges, then yeah, sure he survives. You know, he's weakened for sure, but he survives. If Joe Prococo and Todd Howe and Elaine Calieros, who heads up the nanotech research center for the state, huge guy, if they all go down and are indicted, if it doesn't touch the governor, he could survive, again, very weakened, and I would wonder whether he would actually run for re-election in 2018. I think that still hangs in the balance depending on the outcome of these investigations. And it is eminently clear that Preparara wants the governor. He does not like the governor. Last week when they sentenced Dean Skelos, you know, Barrara put out a statement that not only mentioned Skelos and Silver, saying that, you know, this is important, but he took a shot at the governor's handling of the Moreland Commission, saying that this is why you need independent investigations and not ones that are controlled or not ones that are interfered with or whose plugs are pulled suddenly. So it struck a lot of people as odd that the U.S. attorney would take such a, you know, not so veiled shot at the governor at a time when he's investigating his administration. But certainly you could tell, you know, I think Andrew Cuomo, to a lot of people, see it as Preet Bharara's white whale.
And let me just ask you this. The coming presidential election, we only have 30 seconds. So does the governor's relationship with Hillary Clinton mean something in all of this mess?
Look, would Trump try to use it? It depends on what comes out of the investigations. I'm sure he would. But I don't think that would be a huge factor unless the governor got indicted.
We have been talking with our very good friend and a guy who teaches us something every week that when he's here, Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. Thanks for being here, Ken.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. online at nyscasa.org.